Those strange mental blank spots, an article from foodrelapse.com. One of the questions I get asked most at workshops and retreats is, if I'm powerless over eating, how can I possibly stay away from the first bite, at least without divine intervention? I was contacted recently by someone asking me about an article I'd written. In the article I wrote, "And for those who come in and have gotten abstinence without relapse, I tell them that it's not true for everyone that relapse is a part of recovery. It only will be if they make the conscious choice to slip." The subject of the article was about something else entirely and only tangentially touched on this topic. But in reading that paragraph by itself, I could see how it might fall into the "aren't we powerless over slipping" argument. In More About Alcoholism, the AA Big Book speaks of two examples about the insanity of addiction. The first is the story about the man putting whiskey into milk and thinking it'll be fine. The second is about the man addicted to jaywalking. Both are powerful allegories about the insanity of the disease. It says further, "I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots." This might seem to leave us in a circular logic loop. We need some kind of spiritual awakening so as to achieve that fit spiritual condition so that we will have some defense over these blank spots. At the same time, to get to this fit spiritual condition, we need to have put down the substance and begun to work on our recovery through the steps. Yet, if those blank spots arise, we're back in the food and unable to move toward that fit spiritual condition. And then if we're powerless, you see the logic problem. In the middle of my relapse, my disease was firing out as many excuses to keep me eating as was needed, and this was one of them. "You're powerless over those blank spots," it would say. "That's why you might as well go eat. At some point, God will come down and use the magic wand, remove those blank spots, and you'll just want to stop, and there won't be any cravings. It will be effortless. But for now, just keep eating, just for today." When I was in the food, my disease had one goal to meet every day, and that was to get me to not put the food down for another day. If this thinking made the sale for my disease, well, mission accomplished. What I left out of that article was more of an explanation of my thinking and beliefs on how a higher power, or more accurately, a hierarchy of higher powers, worked to help keep me from picking up that first bite. I believe my abstinence is a gift from my higher power. Why was I finally able to put the food down one day after trying just as hard in previous days? I believe it is what more religious people would call grace. I cannot guarantee I will ever get that grace again, something I could not understand during my slipping cycle. As a result, while I cannot commit to staying abstinent, I can commit to going to any lengths to not pick up that first bite. I can put as many impediments between me and the food as needed to make sure I am able to stay abstinent for another day. I go back to what I was taught to me early in my recovery, that all of the theoretical and idealized concept in AA writings and teachings need to have a real-world connection for them to work in my life. To that end, the concept of a hierarchy of higher powers has been a hallmark of my recovery. Many people have a firm belief in a God of their understanding, while many others have something less or no belief at all. What most of us can agree on, however, is that chances are this higher power existed long before 1935. Before AA, people diagnosed with alcoholism were doomed to death or institutionalization, unless they experienced a profound psychic change, which most of them did not. Among those dead were countless priests, ministers, and rabbis. If a conscious contact with a higher power alone were the answer, those clergymen would have been able to stop drinking. That's why I consider 12-step programs to be God's gift to our time. The key for me is to utilize them as they were meant to be utilized, as a rowboat to the shore of recovery. To that end, I need a real-world hierarchy of higher powers, which, besides my actual higher power includes a sponsor, a food plan, and people I can communicate with at all hours if the urge hits. These are all things I need as obstructions to place between myself and that first compulsive bite. Just as we often hear some are sicker than others, I know for myself that sometimes I am sicker than at other times. I spent a long time in relapse trying to make a 12-step program without a definite food plan work for me, and it did not. I so desperately wanted it to work, but my disease had too strong a hold on me. It wasn't until I was willing to surrender to the fact that I was able to then move to another program that had a more strictly defined approach to recovery. Once I was in that other program, the grace of which I spoke earlier came to be. I stayed abstinent in that program while working hard on the other aspects of my recovery, the emotional and spiritual legs of that three-legged stool. After 7 years in that program, armed with a lot more recovery, I was able to return to my original program and have been abstinent since that grace time. So if we have these strange mental blank spots, what can we do about them? Well, we can have various systems in place to help us avoid them, or to at least have a system of, quote, mirrors, unquote, strategically placed to help us look around those blank spots. First and foremost is a sponsor with whom I talk every day. If I'm having trouble with my food, then food should be the main topic of discussion. The last thing I need, if I cannot put down and keep down the food, is a sponsor who only wants to talk about steps and spiritual growth. Both of those things are important, but it's like talking to a man having a heart attack about changing to a healthier lifestyle instead of doing CPR. As they say in program, first things first. If I am one of those people who finds food creeping up or other foods being introduced at whim that can later cause themselves problems, then a more defined food plan is probably in order. I know at one point in my recovery I had an agreement with my sponsor that I would only look at changing my food plan once a month. Even then, we would discuss any new foods I wanted to introduce into the mix. This was also true concerning any change in portion size. There are a number of foods I can eat without portion limits. Most of them are green. But the ones I couldn't trust myself to, quote, eat like a gentleman, unquote, had to be set in stone a long time ago. When I work with a new sponsee, the first thing I want them to do is write out a food history. The second thing is to lay out their problem foods in the classic red, yellow, and green light classifications. I then question them at length about their yellow light foods, as most of them tend to be red light foods as well. We then either work on a food plan that makes sense or review one drawn up by their health professional. We then try to understand where the danger lines are for their eating. In other words, what behaviors or thinkings should be setting off warning bells that they might be moving towards or breaking their abstinence. Finally, we work on a plan to have in place in case those warning bells hit a critical stage. I recommend having a list of people that can be talked to at all hours. That might mean knowing who can be called at the crack of dawn and who could be called in the wee hours of the night. The most important thing is to realize that it isn't the compulsive eater who wants to break their abstinence, it's the disease at work. Laying the bulwark for being willing to go to any lengths to keep from picking up that first bite is the main defense against this cunning, baffling, and powerful disease. It comes down to the old program slogan, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Does this method always work? Not always, but a lot more often than not. It's an attempt, as much as humanly possible, to shield one from those, quote, strange mental blank spots, unquote. There are those who would say the answer lies solely in asking for help from a higher power, and if that works for you, great. Don't change a thing. In my experience, though, that concept works much better in theory than in reality. My higher power still expects me to, quote, get in the rowboat, unquote. Obviously, the next step after not picking up that first bite is to dive headlong into the steps in recovery. The fact is that if I am spiritually fit, I can handle any food situation life can throw at me. To get to that condition, however, means I need to work my recovery while at the same time staying out of the food. While I can intellectually understand the concepts behind those stories in the Big Book of the whiskey and the milk and the jaywalker, a real-world solution might also have been explored. If those guys had had my sponsor, I'm pretty sure he would have recommended staying out of bars and away from dangerous streets. It might not have worked, but it would have been worth giving it a shot.